I'm Archana. Thanks for having and coming to hear our talk today and inviting us to speak. My talk today focuses on qualitative research in which we explore jail policies related to STD prevention in 7 counties in the United States. It's well established that STDs, HIV, mental health, and substance abuse disorders, homelessness, poverty, and chronic illness are highly prevalent among incarcerated populations. And furthermore, the highest proportions of incarcerated populations in the U.S. Are men of color, particularly African American and Latino men. And the minority populations, especially men of color, have the highest proportions of HIV, STDs, and other health disparities. Jails in the U.S. can be prime settings for public health interventions for a few reasons. For the most part, all individuals go through local jails upon arrest, whether or not they end up being sentenced to state prisons or being released. So interventions would reach the majority of criminal justice populations, and the majority of jail inmates return to the communities from which they came. In this way, public health interventions impact incarcerated individuals as well as their communities. However, for most jail inmates, their jail stays are short, which poses a challenge to those trying to reach them with public health interventions. So given what's known, we wanted to answer the following questions. What are jails doing to address STD prevention as well as HIV prevention and care? What are the factors involved in the counties that focus on STD prevention? And what are the challenges they face? What are the barriers to addressing STD prevention? And what are some of the strategies that some jails have used as an opportunity to address STD prevention? So the work that I'm presenting on was actually part of a larger study. Part of what Ryan presented was that legal assessment that he talked about. And then the second part was developing summary measures based on those laws. And the part that I'm speaking about today is the qualitative exploration of jail policies. That was the third component of that larger study. So what we did was conduct key informant interviews with jail staff, healthcare providers, and administrators in 7 U.S. counties, reporting the highest prevalence of STDs across 3 of 4 disease areas. This was to better understand how jail policies may impact STD prevention among the most frequently incarcerated individuals and the communities to which they returned. So what we did was explore STD testing and treatment during incarceration and continuity of STD-related care, Medicaid benefit status, and services or linkages made for individuals as they re-enter their communities. And this, I'm not going to go over this, but this is basically just talking about how high the rates of STDs are compared to the U.S. in the counties that we focused on. And I'm not going to really go through the methods, but basically, in collaboration with CDC, we developed a semi-structured interview guide, and key informants were identified through internet searches, emails, and phone calls, as well as being connected with health departments in each of the counties to ask for referrals to the appropriate people to talk to, as well as referrals from the key informants that we spoke with. And one thing is we were not allowed to record the interview, so all of the analysis is based on detailed notes. And these were the counties. We did 13 qualitative interviews in September and from March through July 2016. And the gap was we piloted the interview guide in September and then went through OMB approval. And so then after that, we did the rest of the interviews. And this is just a list of the people that we talked to. We talked to medical professionals, jail administrators, as well as some social service providers that all worked with the jails in the county jails. And these are the correctional facilities that we focused on. And I'm just going to really quickly go through each of these just because I want to point out how healthcare was provided there in each one. So Philadelphia Prison System is actually the county jail system in Philadelphia. And they contract to Horizon Health Services for their health care provision for the most part. The New York City Department of Corrections actually oversees corrections for 5 counties. So our focus was Kings County, but it, basically we're talking about New York City Department of Corrections. Most of the people are housed on Rikers Island. And health care provision is provided by a public health benefit corporation that runs all of the New York City's public clinics and hospitals through oversight by the New York City Department of Health. Cook County, Illinois, Cook County's Department of Corrections They are, healthcare is provided by the county health system. Harris County Jail, that was the only one in our in the study that healthcare is actually provided by the correctional system itself. In Dallas County, the county hospital system is contracted to provide healthcare in the jail. And Miami-Dade County also has the county health system. Jackson Health provides correctional health care. And finally, in Los Angeles, they've gone through a huge transition, actually, within the past year, where the health care provision has transferred over to the Department of Health Services. It used to be provided by the correctional system. So just to review quickly, across counties, the majority of individuals in custody in county jails are male, African-American, and are awaiting trial. Nearly all will return back to the communities from which they came, and the term frequent flyers was very frequently used, people coming in and out of jail. And the average length of stay was 2 weeks to 45 days. Many leave within 72 hours. But some people were in jails for multiple years, and some of the reasons would be awaiting trial for capital crimes, having multiple concurrent cases, and having accrued charges while in jail. So as I mentioned in the beginning, jail inmates are extremely sick at intake. I won't go through each of these, but that is something that went across the counties. So, and one person said some individuals get themselves admitted on purpose just to get a rest in jail, having no other place to go. It's talking about the circumstances in their communities. So the next couple of slides show the variety of STD testing and treatment protocols across county jails. Philadelphia is the only one who reported that they have mandatory STD testing within 4 hours of intake. And this is facilitated by having dedicated STD testing staff. Kings County, or the New York Department of Corrections, provides opt-out STD and HIV testing for all females, opt-out syphilis and HIV testing for all men, and opt-out chlamydia and gonorrhea testing for men under the age of 35 or for those presenting symptoms. Cook County provides opt-out testing for all females at intake and testing for men who report symptoms. And as you probably know, chlamydia and gonorrhea don't often present symptoms, so basing testing on symptoms doesn't always catch the right people. In Harris County, after 13 days past intake, when many people may have already been released, Harris County provides opt-out HIV, syphilis, and pregnancy testing, and chlamydia and gonorrhea testing is offered in specific circumstances listed there. Dallas County recently instituted opt-out STD, HIV, and HCV testing because of low testing rates that they were experiencing with opt-in testing, so they changed that. Miami-Dade County offers HIV and syphilis testing at certain points in time, but only offers chlamydia and gonorrhea testing if inmates are symptomatic. And finally, LA County Jail, which is the largest jail in the country, provides testing to specific subgroups. MSM and transgender inmates who are in segregated housing get routine testing. In addition, women are offered testing as part of pregnancy urine-based testing. So given the wide variety availability of STD testing across counties, we summarize the barriers to STD testing and treatment. And they can be broken down into logistic issues, systemic factors, individual level factors, competing priorities at intake, and competing criminal justice priorities. So some of the logistic barriers: lack of adequate space, just having a good place to where the bathroom is located at intake is not really conducive to STD testing. The intake environment lacks privacy for risk assessment questions. Often they're doing the risk assessment in groups, and if one person in the group accepts testing, the group might accept testing, and vice versa. Lack of staff. One place said that they have one phlebotomist. The women's intake is in a completely separate place, so they have to prioritize where that phlebotomist will be. Lack of time to conduct STD testing after all of the other intake procedures. And then the volume of inmates basically being transferred quickly, due to whether it's security-related reasons, presents a major challenge. So a lot of the logistic barriers are just really hard to overcome without making major structural changes in the county jails. One strategy, as I mentioned before, is linking STD testing with urine-based pregnancy testing. Since they're doing that, some jails automatically test women for chlamydia and gonorrhea as well. And then they just have fewer women in jail, so sometimes they just prioritize testing women. So systemic barriers to testing. Inconsistencies in how STD testing is presented to inmates by staff, particularly in facilities where men receive opt-in testing. One key informant said, men don't walk in hoping to get tested, so the motivation to test must come from the screener. Lack of access to previous medical records might actually make people get syphilis testing without needing to because they've already been treated, but there's no information about that. Treatment delays may result in inmates not being treated before they're released. One place said that just having all the different steps in between testing and getting a treatment just is a barrier to getting, they'll miss a lot of people. Bureaucratic delays in obtaining test results. One person said that some of the specimens were just warehoused for a really long time because of lack of payment. So delays in treatment at the pharmacy level, some of the systems in place have resulted in people missing their treatment when it looks like they've gotten their treatment. So they've put in some strategies. Some people have put in strategies to address systemic barriers, including one county changed to a commercial lab because they were able to get their test results quicker. And knowing what the automated pharmacy system was like, one county instituted a way to follow up with patients to double check if they got their treatment and so that they could reorder their treatment quickly. But it still didn't fix the problem with where that was coming from. So some individual level factors were also talked about. Having low acceptance rates among female inmates because they said that they were tested the last time they were there, or a lack of education provided by intake staff. People being afraid of needles or denial about their risk has reduced acceptance rates in some places. Lower acceptance rates due to persistent stigma about STDs and HIV. Here's a quote, although policies may allow for STD and HIV testing in jails, cultural factors related to taboos and stigmas may reduce testing and treatment rates, particularly among some subgroups, such as Latinos and MSM. Historically based suspicion of medical providers, denial of a positive result, and I won't go through the rest, you can see them. So a couple of strategies to address individual level barriers, culturally tailoring STD prevention interventions in the jails, as well as providing more patient education, which does depend on whether they can increase staffing in some places. So looking at competing priorities, there are major barriers to STD testing, including having to address more immediate behavioral health and mental health needs before STD testing and treatment. Many inmates present so that they can't give consent for testing when they first come into the jail system, whether they have to go straight to detox or if they have higher their health needs. Some counties' protocols don't include STD testing until days, or in one case, nearly 2 weeks after intake, and a lot of people are released before that time. Some jails are unable to provide opt-out testing because of limited funding, and they're targeting their resources where they think the priorities are. And security is a major issue. That's the focus of county jails, so a lot of times just security-related reasons mean that they're not going to get an STD test or get treated. So some strategies for grappling with competing priorities. One county pilot tested a study to demonstrate high prevalence both in the jail and in the community. And they were able to demonstrate that there is a high prevalence, it is feasible to test and treat in jail. And before they did that study, they just were not able to provide routine testing, and it was not seen as a priority or feasible. For time's sake, I'm going quickly through these. And I'm actually going to keep going. One of the major problems is not knowing when someone's going to get released. They may go to court and then never come back. So some places have tried to anticipate that by trying to get them tested as soon as possible, right at intake, Working closely with the county health department has been really important in some places, so that the health department can track people who haven't received their treatment. I'm going to skip this slide. So another thing that we talked about with key informants, we explored STD risk of inmates in custody and condom availability in the jails. So overall, key informants said that STD risk is low because sexual activity is prohibited in jails. The Prison Rape Elimination Act was seen as one reason why STD risk is low, because sexual assault is not allowed. If inmates test positive at intake, they can get treated. The treatment is relatively easy, so the STD risk is low if they do have sex. Some key informants did acknowledge that there is sex and there's sexual assault going on. Condoms are not available in 4 of the 7 counties. This is a quote that I wanted to highlight. Condoms are considered contraband. If I accidentally had a condom in my wallet or something and I came to work, I could be prosecuted for bringing contraband onto the facility. This is a sheriff's policy. I believe that PREA has been interpreted as no inmate can give consent to sex, so giving condoms would be promoting non-consensual sex, basically promoting rape in jail. Plus, then if someone is raped using a condom, we can't do a rape kit. 3 county jails do provide condoms. One has buckets of condoms available in the medical area, and anyone can take condoms, while the other 2 have restrictions on how many condoms can be given out, and they have to be given on request. And then as soon as they're opened, they're considered contraband. So whether so what that means, you can... So given all of that, one of the things that I saw a lot of is that overall all county jails have pretty comprehensive health care services available to all jail inmates. It's not based on their charges or anything. The health care providers don't know what their charges are oftentimes. And for some, health care obtained in jail represents the first time that they actually accessed health care. While incarcerated, health providers have more opportunities to follow up with patients and encourage adherence. And when released, nobody is pushing them, so they don't comply, and they go right back where their health is not their priority. They are healthy when they leave, and when they come back, they're way worse off. A couple of key informants talked about how inmates can be, they get reincarcerated just so they can get health care. There was one person who was diagnosed with cancer right before they were released and asked to stay another week so they could get some care. Incarcerated populations are a protected class of people, so sometimes they are getting more inside than they can get outside. I don't think I have much time, but one of the things I wanted to talk about was how in some states, Medicaid benefits, so they have all the access to healthcare inside, but then when they get out, if they're in a state where Medicaid benefits are terminated, like Pennsylvania, it can take 45 to 90 days to get it reinstated, and that's if they go through that process. Where if it's suspended, it's a lot easier to get their benefits reinstated. And this is just, you can scan it really quickly. Those are the places where it's suspended and terminated. So I don't want to go through all of this, but there are some counties that have very robust programs to try to help get people connected back to Medicare. One county, they start discharge planning the day they enter jail, so that with that idea that they never know when they're going to get out, so when they're going to get released, so they try to do as much as they can beforehand. And one jail is using forensic peer specialists to work with people with mental illness to try to get their applications completed. We also asked about reentry linkages in addition to Medicaid benefit re-enrollment. And as I mentioned earlier, the majority, 70 to 98% of inmates, return to the communities that they came from. So they try to link them to community-facing programs. People come into the jails to try to link them. The most robust linkages to care and services in the community are among people who have HIV, people with severe mental illness, pregnant women, and substance users. When the county jail health care provision is provided by the public health, the public hospital, sometimes that facilitates being able to link to community providers because they're the same providers in and out of the jail. One county with strong reentry linkages also provides lockers, a phone number, access to a bank, assistance obtaining identification, which is huge. If you don't have ID, then all of those other things you're supposed to do afterwards can't happen. And I'm out of time, so I'm going to skip all the way to my conclusion. Sorry. So in conclusion, I just wanted to talk about some overarching things that I learned through this research. Discussion of STD risk and prevention must include discussing intersecting health disparities. Criminal justice settings such as jails are focused, and they should be focused on public safety, but if the goal should be to align public health and public safety in the jails, since the people in the jails are the same as those that are in the communities. And then providing access to health screenings, treatment, and support services in jails as the individuals transition back into their communities can do a lot. They can increase criminal justice populations' ability to maintain the gains they achieved in jail, reduce rates of STDs and HIV and associated negative health outcomes, and reduce recidivism. Better use of data needs to happen so that they can target resources, such as in that one community that did the pilot study, and building good relationships and communication in counties between corrections, health providers, and health departments is really important. And I won't talk about my limitations, but there were limitations. And I just wanted to acknowledge the people that worked on the study with me. Sarah Hexum, Kelly Thompson are legal researchers that worked with Brian and others on the legal assessment. Heather Batson and Alexa helped do the interviews. And then Jamie, Kendra, Ryan, and Harold all at CDC were really involved in this study. And if anybody has any questions, there's my contact information. Thank you.
I did have a question.
Oh, great.
I was just curious to know what the methodology was for the jails that
for
you
the
selected
interviews.
Yeah.
And
the caveat to the question is, I was curious as to whether or not you all had reached out to the prisons in Louisiana, since they have the highest rate of incarceration in the world. I'm curious to know how they handle
things. The criteria for the counties initially was based on STD rates in those four categories of disease. Because the study was small, we focused pretty narrowly on those rates, even though there's need everywhere. One of the counties that we were going to talk to, and I ended up not being able to include because nobody answered my phone calls. But in general, what we did was a lot of it involved me making cold calls, really, to county jails and trying to figure out who's providing health care, so a lot of that's not publicly available in terms of contact information, so that was a little bit difficult. So then the next strategy was going to the health departments and trying to go that way. So it was a little bit difficult, but I do acknowledge that there are definitely some counties in here that were not included that could, in a future study, I should think about.